This audio comes to you from the Science of Mind archives.
Morning. Taking up our treatment this morning, let's feel that what we do is perfectly natural, that it's not something that's studied, something rather that's quite spontaneous. If you watch yourself very carefully, you will discover that sometimes your work is better than others. And you will be able to determine, when you do that, that if sometimes you have more of a spontaneous conviction, what you do is more real to you when you do it. The whole act of spiritual mind treatment, definite and conscious, and deliberate but spontaneous, and I believe that the power set in motion, if it is set in motion or whatever happens, is now independent of us. If we believe that we're praying to a God who answers, or that we are using a law of nature that responds, whatever the law may be, then we know that everything we do in nature is independent of us as soon as we comply with the way it works. We plant a seed and it grows. We use any law, set it in motion if that's what happens, or use it. And now it is independent of us, but it works for the purpose for which we designate. I was thinking the other day, as I told the group upstairs this morning, went out through Boulder Dam, and here were great generators, any one of which could furnish all the power, they said, for the city of Seattle. Well, that would mean that four of them could furnish it for all of Los Angeles, domestic needs. Seems inconceivable because you don't see anything happening. Some water goes down through a hole, and it turns some mechanism, and that generates some energy and converts it into power or whatever it does, and now it goes onto a wire and comes down and is hooked up for definite purposes. I thought the same thing happens. I believe the universe is one system. I believe the laws of physics and the laws of spirit and the laws of mind all are coordinated and work like one law. They will have to if there's only one system. I think every research into modern medicine, psychosomatic medicine, is a proof of this. Then if we see a law working in nature, in physics, in any of the sciences, I think we can say there is a law of mind that operates in an identical manner. Now that would mean that if we go up into a high state of consciousness, there's water up there is higher than the sea level, and lose some energy operating through our own consciousness and intelligence, definitely, we would, I think, in a definite sense, take a power out of the universe by so doing, by recognition it would be, which power now flowing through our generator, which is our own consciousness, our own personal intelligence, hooked up with that greater than it is, the universe, can now be used for a definite purpose, to heal and to help at the other end of the line, because it's all in one medium, and that our intent and our purpose would decide. I believe it operates exactly like that. Whether it's taking the energy out of the waterfall there at Boulder Dam, converting it into a power and distributing it for a purpose, we will say we now turn our thought and consciousness to the realization that there is the power operating right here, going through our word for the purpose we designate. We'll be doing the same thing. So let us know that our word is the presence and the power and the activity of the living spirit in us. It isn't separate from God. Nothing is separate from God. Our word is God speaking at the level of our individual awareness, backed by all the presence and all the that there is in the universe and all the life. So we affirm that every person in this room, of a necessity being a manifestation of that presence, that power, and that activity, is now perfect. What is meant by that saying, be ye perfect even as your Father within you is perfect? Affirm the perfection of our own spirit, the manifestation of God in us, the law of good operating through us. We affirm that our word is the presence and the power and the act right now. We affirm that this body is a spiritual reality. We are not denying it. Rather, we are affirming that there is perfect circulation, perfect assimilation, and perfect elimination. There is one life. That life is perfect. That life is God, pure spirit. That life is our life now. The rhythm of that life flows through us, and there is nothing to interrupt it, nothing to congest it, nothing to stagnate it. We feel the perfect flow of that divine life, and as it flows, if there seems to be anything that denies it, it is removed, because that one power and one life within us now, which is God, the living spirit. And there is no other presence, no other power, and no other life. Now we affirm this for everyone in this room. And if we'd like to help somebody else, just think of that person, wherever he may be, and say, there is one life, that life is perfect, that life is God. That life is life right now, flowing through this person perfectly, divinely, and completely. There is one life. That life is perfect. We have to feel this. I don't mean with any great emotion, but this is true about this person. It is true that if there's anything along this word is the law of elimination to it. We expect this to happen. Between what we are now announcing and what happened, there is one life, it is manifest. There is no obstruction. Manifest now in this person we are thinking about. There's nothing anywhere to hinder it. Feel and announce that this person is perfect in spirit, mind, they're all one anyway. Now as we turn to our own thought again, let us announce that we are governed and guided and directed by divine intelligence, the mind that knows all things is operating in us. It knows what to do in us right now. Let us believe that every apparent problem is dissolved into its own answer. That instead of the problem, there is the answer in joy. Let us believe that new ideas and thoughts and circumstances and situations are coming to us. That we are one with all the abundance and good that there is. Let us believe that every person we meet is blessed. Everything we touch is prospered. Every situation we find ourselves in is benefited. That whether we are aware of it or not, we bring joy and light and laughter and life and song and a sense of security, deep peace, and beauty to every situation and every person without even having to be aware of it. This is the greatest good of all. This we accept and bless the thought. So it is. Unusual. They are written by Felicia Gazica, very well-known writer. I told you I got a letter last week from the roving editor of the Literary Reader's Digest, a friend of Felicia's. She had sent him the magazine, and he complimented us very highly and complimented her very highly. This is my family and my associates. I exist as a divine being. Therefore, I am the instrument through which the wisdom of the Creator is ever functioning. My place in life is a good place, and my people are good people. I like that. Felicia has quite a background, and she has accomplished a great deal in her life. There was a time when it didn't look as though her people were good people or her place was a good place. I am blessed with spiritual awareness that enables me to see through every seeming false human trait, and I let wisdom light the private corners of my mind and the public places where I walk. That's one of the most remarkable lines I've ever read. Sounds much like Emerson. I am delivered from gossip. That's quite a claim. I never have heard Felicia gossip, however. Sensitivity and resentment. God in me has no hereditary failing. She certainly covering the waterfront, isn't she? I have no pattern of poverty, illness, or instability. Well, I expect she has, and I expect we all have. This is a declaration of the truth about the reality of every person living. One of the most remarkable meditation lessons I have ever read. The spirit as man is perfect, and I am that perfection now. My true prayer is a recognition and an acceptance of God in me and all men. You remember Emerson said that true prayer is the proclamation of a jubilant and a beholding soul. Through knowing this, others are aroused to self-recognition. Notice with what nicety she has handled this. She didn't say, others will look at me and drop dead. I'm so glad she didn't. Felicia's had too much experience in life, a newspaper woman and a writer. She says, others will be better able to arrive at a self-recognition. What Jesus meant when he said, it is expedient that I go away, that the Spirit shall bring to your awareness, your own personal awareness, the truth is born within our own consciousness. Through my love of God, all false ideas others may have about me or us are corrected. She is again including the others with herself, which I think is a wonderful inclusion. I now stop mourning the past, arguing about the present, are trying to manipulate the future. It is today that we arrive at salvation. I let my life be joyous, and I share this joy with others. I surround my family and friends with a consciousness of love, wherever they may be. We are not separated, but live as one in God. She has a daughter living here, grandchildren, a grandchild, and she lives in New York. Today, I know that I am God's child, fully aware of my freedom to express Him in every way. I very seldom read a whole one of these. This, I think, is a classic of spiritual affirmation. And let us remember as we repeat the Lord's Prayer, the inclusiveness and the simplicity of it. It's an affirmation. I told you last week I was going to Las Vegas, and I suppose I should report on the success of the trip. Not successful in the enterprise you're thinking of, because that never happened. But I spoke there three times, and there were several hundred people, very fine people. And I found many friends, both in the hotels and around town. Very amazing to me. I must have met at least 50 people who used to live in Los Angeles and come to our work. Now, that's very good for a new enterprise. It's only been going on about a year under the leadership of Lee Mooney and his very lovely and capable and very dedicated wife. Lee came to us from the Methodist Church. There's hope for all religions, isn't there? And isn't that wonderful? I did do a few things that I do not need to report on, because I brought nothing back as evidence or proof or demonstration that I had done it. Very wonderful thing to me. Now, I'm going up to Santa Barbara next Thursday night, where Don Curtis, doing such a remarkable thing, and the following week, Vallejo and Santa Rosa and San Francisco, coming back to light for Sunday morning. Another thing that fascinates me about this, and I get a great kick out of it, of course, or I wouldn't do it. You might say, don't you do it for duty? I would do nothing for duty. What is done for duty is not done. If it isn't a spontaneous thing, it's no good. The thing that interests me is the eagerness with which people listen and the friendship they give back. All these people, except a few I met, are strangers, but they were calling us Hazel and Ernest from the very first night. By the next noon, when we had a party, believe it or not, in a very beautiful dining room at the Thunderbird Hotel, the bird didn't thunder, but it's very beautiful. First time I ever had, it was very interesting too. And it was a very large and wonderful lunch. And I thought, well, this is it. This is life as it is lived. There's nothing good or bad, but thinking makes it so. If evil comes to us, it's because we deposit it somewhere and then have to take it back. But I thought of the response of love, which, beyond everything else, pleases me, because I have a great feeling that in the evolution of this idea of love, it is inevitable that the time shall come that we love everyone the way we now love a few people. The only reason we are afraid of it is we are afraid we will lose the love of the few people. In other words, we sweat blood doing little things in life right down the line, and big things do themselves because they have a cosmic support. We hang on to littleness with such the tenacity of a hungry bulldog to a soup bone. We'll not give it up. Didn't know maybe there was a good piece of tender steak just around the corner. It's a very interesting thing. Now, Jesus said if we wanted to find our lives, we'll have to lose it. And I think this is what he meant. Surely Jesus did not mean that we have to get dead to get alive. He had too much sense. He did not mean that we should let go of something that's real. I think he meant this. If we want to discover joy, we'll have to lose misery. It doesn't seem to be any other way. If we want to find peace, we'll have to let go of confusion. This is losing our life. But the only life we are called upon to lose is a life that is a shadow, a myth, and something that, like physical disease, we ought to be glad to get rid of. I am impressed and very happy about the way new groups in new places listen with such eagerness, because we have a very simple message. It's profound. Its very simplicity eludes us. We are so accustomed to thinking of profound things as being something which only Plato or Jesus or Socrates or Aristotle could have understood. I've read Plato and the Neoplatonists. I've read Socrates and Aristotle and Kant and Berkeley and Spinoza and most of them. And I think it's wonderful insofar as I understand it, which isn't so far, just in so far, but not very far. And I will have to confess to you that the only way I ever get these people, because I don't think that way, think very simply, I read a paragraph two or three times and make up my mind this is what the fella thought he meant. Then I say it aloud two or three times to myself in my own language, and at last, at least, I know what I thought he meant. That's the only way I can convert it into my own language. We all must speak the language that is natural to us. Nobody can live by proxy. Emerson said we must study to be ourselves. To listen deeply and greatly, I believe he said, to that flash of consciousness that is in our own mind. And I think the greatest thing about our teaching and its practice is the utter simplicity of it. There is confusion enough in the world without bringing a new confusion philosophically or theologically. What we have to do is to speak a language that you and I understand. And if we understand it, everybody else will. So our subject this morning is why people like us. And I thought, as I mentioned to you last week, I would like to try the experiment first of explaining what I think is the difference between something that life has endowed us with and something that we make ourselves. You see, you and I did not think up our birth. At least, I didn't think up mine. I don't know whether it had been any better or any worse. My parents were all right. The rest happened afterward. They had nothing to do with it. They were fine people. But that individualization of everything in the universe is something that we have to pay attention to. No two blades of grass are alike. No two crystals, no two snowflakes. It's impossible for us to conceive of such an infinite variety in one unity. We can only think of it mathematically. Now, no two thumbprints. Now, if that's true, and nature has stamped upon each one of us the unique characteristic of a distinct individualization, then I say that's the gift of God. What we really are, that is given. We didn't create it. We didn't make it. It is God in us. And I believe it is God individualized through each one of us in a different way, but always from the standpoint of a fundamental unity. It's like you go out in the garden and see 100 different kinds of plants and flowers growing. Each expresses the characteristics individual to itself. And each is an individualization of one creative soil. How much of the creativity of that soil? The other day I planted in front of one thing some rose bushes, and in front of the rose bushes some pansies, and alongside of it a rock garden, a dozen different kinds of succulent plants. Now they were all planted in the same soil, and I planted them and watered them, and they're doing well. Now each one is different from the other one, but each one is rooted in one thing. Emerson said there's one mind common to all individual men. There is one God. The ancient Hebrew said, "Hear, O Israel, the Eternal, the Lord thy God is one." There is only one life. Einstein tells us there's one law governing all laws in physics. All the varied manifestations of mathematics come from the original digit, one. All colors come from what is, in a sense, is no color. Now, if we can get this in mind, that each one of us is rooted in a common soil, that is God, the mind of God is flowing through each one of us, how much of the mind of God is flowing through you and through me? Now, I'd like to ask another question. Here is this desk podium, pulpit, stand. I don't know what it is. That's it, anyway, right there. Now, I can tip it, and I can knock it over, and change its position, but gravitational force is holding it where I place it. How much gravitational force is operating upon that desk? Well, you'll say at once, don't be silly. All of it. All of it. And you'd be right. How much life is operating in and through you and me? All of it, not part of it. There is nothing that can alter the allness of that force operating at least the envelope of this planet. There's a place where it changes as we go up. But right here, where it's designed to be, all of gravitational force is there. All right, let us say you and I each have a mind, or are using the mind, which is God. How much of the mind of God is our mind? This is just as legitimate a question. How much gravity holds this in place? How much of the principle of mathematics is in addition, subtraction, division, and multiplication? All of it. Well, now, it isn't any different to say the mind of God is my mind. I'm using it. I have access to all of it. It's all flowing into me, but only as much flows through me as I permit, whether I am aware of it or not, but it is the mind of God. Someday when the truth is taught more clearly than it is now, and I mean spiritual truth, and we better understand what Jesus meant when he said, the Father and I are one, yet the Father is greater than I, but it is not I, but the Father in me, he doeth the works. We shall know that Jesus was saying, there is one mind, spirit, or power, one presence, person, or being, one law, cause, or absolute, one God, and only one, and that God that made everything is the God in me making the things I'm making. As Emerson said, the Ancient of Days is in the latest invention. Now, it's necessary to establish this because you and I cannot have a mind separate from God. We cannot have a life separate from God. We are individualizations of this terrific, this immense, this stupendous, this infinite thing we call God. But I don't think any of us doubt it. But have we tried to think what it means? That thing which made my thumbprints different from yours, ordained in so doing that I should represent God differently from any other human being who ever lived or whoever will. I don't mean better or worse, but different. That's what individualization is, rooted in unity. And by the way, well, to remind ourselves, that is what democracy is. That is what we mean by a federal government. Many in one. It complies with the two great realities of nature. First of all, God is one. Next of all, God's individualized in everything. So that unity and that individualization is the very spirit of democracy. The very essence of it. It's what makes it what it is. Now then, all of God is at the point of my individualization. I didn't make it. I can't change it. If I deny it, it'll still be there. If I affirm it, there won't be any more of it there. But when I deny it, I can't use it as well. When I affirm it, I can embody more of it and generate more power from it, as we have been talking about. I should then recognize my own individualization. Now, this is what our Eastern friends mean by self realization, and they are right. Salvation is through self-realization. It is by grace in that it's the gift of God in the beginning, but what we do with it is certainly what we do with it. Now you'll say, but we came to hear why people like people. I'm talking about it, but it doesn't sound it. Every person being a unique institution in the universe, a direct individualization of God, something that he's born with and he can't help it, and it's good because God never made a mistake, has back of his personality as a gift the very thing which is life. I don't believe it's ever violated. I think we're born with it. I think when we leave this world, it's because it isn't free to operate, whether we call it disease, accident, and as an impatient gesture, it discards this which is no longer a fitting garment. That's my conviction. Because it will not be bound. There's something in us that seems to know beyond our experience. If there were not something within us that knows beyond our experience, we could never experience a new thing and no invention would ever be made. Now that's what I call the individuality. Now let us consider the personality, which is an entirely different thing. It may or may not be obnoxious. Psychology, they speak of the business personality, the religious personality, the philosophic personality, the social personality, the personality in the house, and they have all kinds of expressions for personality, and quite rightly too, because personality is what we do with something we already had. We have the land, now personality is cultivating the individualization. It's a good start to know that we had the land. It's a good start to know that already it's provided that we should be and live and express life. It will now be a good thing to train the personality to receive from the individualization which is God in us. Remember, the individualization of God in us is God in us. It isn't something else. It doesn't have to go way a long ways to find God. This is God individualized as the point of self-consciousness and awareness within himself, in my estimation. Now, this isn't any claim of conceit. We didn't make it, therefore we don't have to be conceited about it. To be very humbly grateful for it. But if it's true, we ought to recognize it. Now that's why Walt Whitman said, there is more to a man than is contained between his head and his bootstrap. That's why Browning said, at the center of this thing nestles the seed of perfection. It is what is meant by Christ in us. Jesus was the personality. Christ was the presence. It is what the Hindus meant by Atman and Brahma. That is, one was God and the other was the incarnation. It is what is meant by Buddha in Buddhism. Buddha does not mean a person. It means a principle individualized through a person, just as Christ does. Jesus the man, Christ the presence of the principle, but let's bring it right down to date. John Smith, the person, as we see him, but back of him and within him, the principle and the present, uniquely representing itself now. Now it must be, in my estimation, and I believe it to be, that back of our personality and within it, now, I know it's true because I can feel it. And you can feel it too. Everybody feels it. It's where all inspiration comes from. It is the avenue through which all revelation comes. It is what we are, but more than what we appear to be. We all feel it. If it is there, and the personality refuses to accept it, hinders its manifestation. Denying it brings a cloud between. I have had a number of experiences in my life where I seem to be looking through a tube and it seems to be full of vapor. Maybe it's a psychic experience, I don't know. But sometimes that vapor clears up and at the other end of it, there's something pretty nice. The Bible says, now we see you through a glass darkly. I suppose that's what it meant. But if we have a unique individualization, the root of our personality is as perfect as God. Now some will say, that's blasphemy, that's terrible, it will scare the people who are already scared, and they'll be more scared. And maybe sometime they'll get scared enough to drop dead. And then they'll wake up and find out that they were scared of nothing but scare. And the sooner they drop dead, the quicker they'll get alive. This isn't sadism. Yeah, I mean, it's rational. Who wants to live forever in a prison? I don't. All right, there is back of, and that means within each one of us, be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which art in heaven is perfect, our Father which art in heaven. Hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That's what Jesus is talking about. He's saying, all right, God, you're already here. Heaven is in here. Your kingdom out here will come when that which is in here manifests itself here. Now, this is what Jesus was talking about. Again, the Bible says, Jesus said, and no man hath ascended up into heaven except he who came down from heaven, even the Son of Man who is in heaven. Now, let's translate in that term. He's saying you couldn't go to heaven unless you came from heaven, and you could neither have come from heaven nor could you go to it unless you were in heaven, even the Son of Man who is, present tense, in heaven. Again, the New Testament says, beloved, now are we the sons of God. We're that now. And it doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. And everyone who has this hope in him purifieth himself, even as he is pure. It's one of the most terrific sayings in the Bible. Let's analyze it. Beloved, we're the sons of God right now. We don't have to wait. We are that. It doth not yet appear what we shall be. I mean, while we are that, hasn't completely unfolded in our experience. Eye hath not seen, ear heard, nor has the tongue described the glory and the beauty. Plotinus said, its beauty is immense. It doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when he shall appear, now that's the thing that's already we are, we shall be like him. Why? Because we shall see him as he is. This is it. We shall see him as he is, and when we see him as he is, he will appear. Act as though I am and I will be. Believe and it will be done. Act as though we're divine beings and we are divine. This is what he's talking about. And then he goes on and says, and everyone who hath this hope in him purifieth himself even as he is pure. In other words, the very acknowledgement of that hope, the recognition of that presence, the agreement with it, causes a flow of the divine individualization into our personality, animating it, sustaining it. It lives by proxy. It's a bad copy of its original. And that's exactly what Plato and all of the Platonists taught. And it's exactly what Jesus taught, the pattern on the mount. That there is, and modern science is at last beginning to teach it in physics. Everything in this world is a copy of an invisible pattern. It doesn't mean that it's unreal, it just means we live because a larger life lives in us. Everyone who hath this hope in him purifieth himself even as he is pure. Now you might say, what's that got to do with why we like people? We always like people who reveal to us something we want and need and feel, and who awaken within us the revelation of the same thing in us. This is always true. We always like people who give us a sense of peace and joy and security and love. We always like people who make us feel and think better of ourselves. Always. It's an unfailing formula. I used to read a lot of books about personality until I realized that they would burn. That was a great discovery. You see, it ain't something you get out of a book. It isn't that at all. A personality is not this dynamic thing that knocks them down dead and wallops them right between the eyes. And somebody said to me, I am training myself. I can go down the street now and look somebody right in the back of the neck and make him turn around. I said, brother, you've gone a long way. What happens next? He got a little confused here. Seemed like a very wasted effort to me. Personality is not that thing that develops the aggression. That's all done because the individualization is not expressed in the personality. It's called in psychology an inferiority complex based on an unconscious sense of rejection. And they are 100% right. Pretty near 100%, 99. And 9/10 like Ivory Soap. I don't know why they didn't finish the job in Ivory Soap and put the other bubble in it and call it 100% perfect, but I guess nothing in this world is completely perfect. Now, people always like people who make them feel safe, secure, who reveal to them a simple, direct, sincere simplicity, and who never say one thing to them while they mean another. It is absolutely impossible to contact people psychologically and think differently about them than we say without their knowing it. I always say to them exactly what I think, good, bad, or indifferent, but never viciously. People feel our criticism. Now, let's prove this. Because it's only natural to want people to like us. I like to have people like me. I don't think there's anything wrong about it. I don't think there's anything silly about it. And I'd be amazed if it didn't happen, because I like people. And I've learned, as we all must learn, to take everybody, for better or for worse, right where he is. Have a great tolerance for life and living. It's the only way to get along with life. Now, it is now known that a canary bird and a dog and a cat and maybe a goldfish, I don't know about the goldfish, can become neurotic by taking on the atmosphere around them. I read in the Reader's Digest or something, I told you about it, about the man that gets on the streetcar feeling for good, so good, and he reads his paper. By the time he gets off, he wishes he was dead, and he's taken on the morbidity of somebody he sat beside. I'll tell you that personal emanation on their plane are just as real as physical ones. The pestilence that walketh in darkness, or the arrow that flieth by noonday. Whoever wrote that in one of the Psalms, this is what he was talking about. We are all influenced by the unconscious atmosphere of those around us unless we have built up a barrier, not of aggression, but a barrier of inward peace and wholeness. Against such there is no law. The Bible says the weapon is not shaped that can be used against him. Now these things are real. They're not just make-believe things. This is the kind of a life we live. This is the way we are now. We didn't make it and we can't change it. We can only use it rightly. Therefore, the person who wishes not to influence people, I think that's silly. If anybody tries to influence me, I always walk away from them. It's bad salesmanship anyway. But the people we want to be with are the people that we feel whole with. We feel secure, we feel happy. There isn't any criticism. But we know subjectively, if they say, oh, you're so sweet. You remember Strange Interlude by O'Neill, where everybody said what he was supposed to say, and one at a side, he said what he thought. And I remember one woman looked at her husband and, oh, she says, you're so dear and sweet. And she turns around and she says, good God, when will I have the courage to tell this fool what I think of him? And he didn't feel happy with her at all. Now, you see, you just can't do it, but we try. If the personality tolerant, if it has love even for our follies, if it can bless and curse not, if it can be discriminating without being critical, if it has faith within itself and a sense of calm and joy, everybody like it. Everyone will like that person. Somebody say, well, he's kind of a screwy nut. Say, well, he may be, but I like him. Say, he hasn't any sense. Say, I know that, but I like him. Say, what does he offer? What can he give you? Says, I don't know, but I like him. And that's enough. If people feel, you see, we're all surrounded by an atmosphere that's psychic. Now that means mental, subjective, emotional. In this aura, which merely means there's nothing mysterious about this, people see it, pictures have been taken of it, we all feel it, there's nothing weird about it. We got one whether we like it or not. We even all have a halo, whether it's straight or not. These are not things that we can say, I don't like it, therefore I won't have it. You might as well say, I have no toes, I have no stomach. Well, if you haven't any stomach, brother, send for an undertaker. You're dead in right now on this plane. Now, this thing isn't like the physical body. When I walk here, I'm stopped by this, but this kind of interpenetrates and interflows. You feel it. When this man sat down beside of the man, he took on this. You know how you take on conditions? Now, I believe that whatever we're vibrating toward, we'll take on from the people around us, from the world itself, and out of our own experience. Now, that means not that we have to be too much on guard, but that we should gradually surround ourselves with an atmosphere of peace, of joy, of confidence. And so we want people to like us. And this is why they like us. And whether they say it or not, people may curry your favor if you've got money to spend on them. They may say, well, this guy can introduce me to some other person. Or this person has influence in high places or social position, or he's got this or that or something else. I said to somebody else, said, will you introduce me to somebody? It was a person in his field of a very interesting person. I said, I don't know. I said, why not? I said, I am afraid if I do, you'll ask that person to do something for you. Unless you will promise that in no way you will ever try to use that person, I will not introduce you to him. Because I don't like that. We don't have to live that way. If we learn to live as whole human beings ourselves, that's all we have to do. Everyone we meet will make an exception to us, no matter who we are, and they will like us. What more do we want? You might say, is it so important that people like us? I think it is. I think the person who runs around saying, I don't care so-and-so what anybody thinks of me, that is a lot of hot air to cover up a wound. Everybody cares. And if he didn't care, there'd be something wrong with him. He doesn't have to be depressed about it. But certainly if we're all rooted in one common soil, why shouldn't we want people's love? Why shouldn't we feel the need of it? There is nothing on earth so precious as friendship. There is nothing so valuable as love. There is no compensation on earth that can pay or be a compensation for the lack of joy in living. Nothing. How then are we going to? As I said in our meditation, I think the greatest good of all in our treatment, and I believe in treatment, the only sign we have that we know what we're talking about. I said in Las Vegas the other day, so you're starting a church, get together and prove what you believe. This is the only way to convert people. These signs shall follow them that believe. But I believe in all of our treatment we should be building up out of a desire that's deep and sincere, a realization that every person we meet is blessed. Everything we touch springs into newness of life. Every discordant situation is harmonized. If it is true, men could get in a streetcar, take on this thing and wish he was dead before he got after a vague feeling of insecurity and anxiety which he borrowed from the other person. Why isn't it true that just the opposite should be there? It is. Now, this is how it was that the woman touched the hem of the seamless robe and was healed. Whittier said, the healing of the seamless dress is by our beds of pain. We touch him in life's throng and press, and we are whole again. Wouldn't you rather than anything on earth feel that just your presence without any effort blessed everything? I know everybody would. Now, I've talked with the tough-minded and the hard-boiled about these things. And believe me, when you take off this shirt and make them let down their hair, poke a few pins into them to let out the too much pressure of hot air, they all sit right down and begin to cry. And then they say, well, I'm ashamed. I say, these are good tears. Because when you cry these kind of tears, someday you'll begin to laugh. And it'll be a real laugh. It won't be a cackle. It won't be the kind of a smile that comes over the physiognomy of reluctance and you wonder if it'll crack the face. It won't be that at all. It'll be something that springs spontaneously from the very center of life. God endowed, God maintained, God created, God sustained. It's in every living soul. Drawing then on this, we do not even need to wonder about the personality. We always think love, whatever the personality does, will be lovely. If we always think beauty, it will be beautiful. Has nothing to do with our look objectively. It has to do with that thing that shines through the eyes, speaks through the mouth, articulates in our language something we feel in every living soul. And you shake hands with a person only to turn from him. You shake hands with another person, and often you say to yourself to the effect, I wish I knew you because I should love you. Wherever that is revealed, wherever that is loose, the originating energy and unity of the universe rushes forth to embrace itself for the delight of its own being. This, I think, is behind everyone's person. The individualized God, the unique presentation of the eternal, fresh and new, flowing spontaneously from the invisible source of that river, which is God. This is the joy of life. This is the power of life. This is the presence of life. And the wonder of it is that that gift which was made by heaven and not earned by man.
For more spiritual content like this, visit scienceofmindarchives.com.